Perek Beis Mishnah Dalet, and we're going to focus on one line, and that is the phrase of Hillel, the teaching of Hillel Omer, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. Hillel said that we should be careful not to separate or detach ourselves from the community, from the neighborhood, from the society. We should be a part of the Tzibur. What exactly is this Mishnah referring to? That's what I'd like to discuss. There are two different interpretations. We're going to talk about both of them, and we're going to see how it's relevant lahalacha as well. The Ritva writes in Maseches Tainis that what the Mishnah here means, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur, is when you have a community that is in a state of tragedy, when there is some kind of misfortune, when there is a sense of adversity in the community, you should make sure to be a part of it. You should share in that sorrow. You should share in that suffering, even though it's not really a part of your life, even though it doesn't affect you, and even though the tragedy has nothing to do with your family at all. You should go out of your way to be a part in participation of that which is going on in the community, even though at face value it seems to have no connection to you at all. Let's look at a Gemara Maseches Tainis, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Let's learn it together. Tana Rabbanan, Bizman She Yisrael Shiruyim Bitzar. When you have a time that the Jewish people are in a state of difficulty, Upirish Echad Mehem, and one member of the Jewish community says, you know, it's not my problem. So this morning there are rockets fired in Gaza, 20 rockets in 3.5 minutes, and you say to yourself, I live comfortably here, it's not my problem. I don't know anybody who lives in Sderot, and I don't really care, and I'm going to go get my coffee on Central Avenue this morning like I would any other day, and I'm going to go on with my life like nothing is happening. Says the Gemara about that person, I know, I'm talking to the people that are not on Central Avenue. But if you thought you were going to go there afterward, think twice. Ba'in shnei malachei hasharei shemalavin lo la'adam, malachei hasharei skamu manichin lo yedeim al rosho. And they place their hands on the person's head, vi'omrim, and they say, ploni zeh shepirish min hatzibur. This individual who has separated him or herself from the tragedy of the community, this person who doesn't identify with the greater whole of Am Yisrael and what they're going through, they will also suffer the consequence, al yira b'nachama satzibur. When we have a communal nechama, when we have the opportunity to have a geula, you will not be a part of it, says the Gemara. If you don't feel that you should share in the suffering of the Jewish people, you don't have a right to share in the triumph of the Jewish people either. Tanya Idach says the Gemara, Bizman Shatzibur Shari Bitzar, when you have a community that is in distress, Al Yomar Adam, a person is not allowed to say, Eilech Lebesi Va'ocha Va'eshta, you cannot just ignore and disregard the larger story that's going on. V'shalom Alecha Nafshi, you can't say, you know, they'll deal with their problems and I'll be fine, I'll move on with my own life. Says the Gemara, that is an unacceptable attitude. It doesn't mean we have to walk around depressed all day. It doesn't mean that we have to be people who are not able to do anything. But it does mean that we have to leave time and space to be able to identify with the trouble, with the difficulty, with the struggles of other people. This is exactly what Mordechai HaTzadik tells Esther HaMalka. In the story of Megillas Esther, as we know, Esther herself is pretty safe. Esther is the queen of the land. And Mordechai comes to her and he says, Al Tidami bin Afshech. Tidami min Afshech means dimion, means don't have this imagination. Al Tidami bin Afshech, don't think, Lihimaleit Beis HaMelech Mikol HaYehudim. Don't think you're safe just because you're in the palace. Let's translate those words into our terms. Don't think you're safe just because you're in the United States. Oh, it's the Jews on the other side of the ocean who have a problem. And as those who live on the neighboring country, you know, with all those terrorists, those are the ones who have a problem. But we're here, says Mordechai HaTzadik to Esther, and it's something that resonates with us today as well. Al Tidami bin Avsheikh, don't have this false sense of security. Don't believe that you're okay, Lihimaleit Beis HaMelech Mikol HaYehudim, to run away from the rest of the Jewish people and say, I'm fine, I have asylum, I'm in the palace, and nothing's going to happen to me. To that, Mordechai says, I want you to know, Revach v'hatzala yamu la'yehudim mimakom acher. I'd like you to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, the Jewish people are going to survive. There's no question that the Jewish people are going to survive. Question only is, are you going to be a part of their survival? And I'm telling you now, says Mordechai, if you don't figure out how to put yourself in the same category, in the same classification as the rest of the Jewish people, what's going to happen is the Jewish people will survive, but you won't be a part of it. Ve'at u'beis avich tovedun. You will be destroyed. Nobody will ever remember you. And you think you're safe, but you won't be a part of it. Those are the words that he shares. And this really was the entire life of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had the same story. He was adopted as an Egyptian prince. He was living in the palace. He had a good life. And he had every right to continue living on his life that way while all the rest of the Jewish people were being terribly, terribly oppressed in Egypt. And Moshe Rabbeinu chooses not to do that. What are we told? Vayhi bayamim arabim ahem. And it was in those days, Vayigdal Moshe, Vayetze Alechav. Moshe Rabbeinu grew up and he goes out to his brothers. What does it mean he grew up? Everybody grows up. I mean, some people don't. But everybody grows up physically. So what does it mean, Vayigdal Moshe, what the Torah has to say that Moshe Rabbeinu celebrated a birthday? What does it mean, Vayigdal Moshe? It means the next words, Vayar b'sivlo sam, part of growing up is to see something larger than ourselves. Rav Shimon Shkup writes in the introduction to his Sefer about the transition that a person goes through throughout life. I've said this many times in the past, but a child is born and their hands are closed, their fists are closed. And we know that the practice is when the Chevra Kadisha prepares a body for burial, they open up the hands and people are buried like this with their hands wide open. Why is that? The symbolism is because through the journey of life, we start off being all about ourselves and taking, and everything is for me. And as I'm a very young child, I have no ability to give to others. All I can do is take and have people provide for me. And my parents do everything. I can't even do my basic necessities. And the hope and the aspiration is that through life, our hands become more and more expanded. We grow up and we see that there's something larger than ourselves in the world. And as we go through different stages of life, that's really what we're supposed to be doing. To notice more and more how much larger the world is, the community is, myself expands. As I come to see and integrate myself within the community, I understand that it's much larger than I am. And says Rav Shimon Shkab, that's what it means to become a gadol. Becoming a gadol doesn't just mean physically I become larger, I become bigger, but it means that I expand my mind, I expand myself, I see myself in the context of something much larger. That's what it means, Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grew up, and as a result of his growing up, Vayar b'sivlo sam, he now identifies with other people. It's not all about himself anymore. He had every right to stay in the palace, but he didn't. And he comes out and he sees an injustice, Vayar ish mitzri, maka ish ivri, he sees that the Jews are being oppressed, and he gets involved. He could have retreated and gone back to the safety of his own home. But he chose not to do that. And that's really the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. If you see later on in his life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what, we're going to destroy the Jewish people after this terrible Aveira, this terrible sin of the Egel Azav. Moshe Rabbeinu begs on their behalf. And in the end, ultimately, Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that he has forgiven the Jewish people. But what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Moshe Rabbeinu says before that, Va'ata im tisa chatasam, if you are willing to forgive them, v'im ayin mecheni na misifrecha asher kasavta, and if you're not prepared to forgive the Jewish people, take me out of the Torah. I don't want to be involved in this. Why, Moshe? Why? You didn't do anything wrong. He wasn't involved in this whole story. This fiasco happened while he was gone. So why does Moshe Rabbeinu volunteer to take a punishment on behalf of the Jewish people? Why should he suffer the consequence for something he didn't do? But that was the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, to understand that even though I wasn't involved, and even though it has nothing to do with my life, and even though I really shouldn't be getting involved, I cannot sleep at night knowing that this is going on with the Jewish people. I cannot rest when I know that everyone else is going through a terrible tragedy and I'm just sitting comfortably in my own space. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Moshe, I'm going to make a nation only from you. And we're going to start all over again. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, that's unacceptable. I can take all the glory for myself, but what kind of life would that be without the context of the larger Jewish community? And that is what we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Shalah HaKadosh writes, if you look here in number Gimel. In Parshas Va'era, the Torah goes through a whole listing of all the different Shvatim. And there, something very unusual happens. We're told all of the names of the children of Levi as opposed to the other Shvatim. Why does the Torah only list the children of Levi And it doesn't talk about the children of Reuven and Shimon and Yehuda and Yisachar. Why are they all left out? What is unique about the Shevet Levi that they have the ability to be listed in the Torah itself in Parshas Va'era? Let's look at the Shalar Kadosh. Shalevi Nahag Be'es Nesina Shemos Labanav. The Torah is trying to teach us that Levi did something extraordinary. Levi, if you remember, was not part of the Shibud Mitzrayim. Levi was not enslaved. All the other Shvatim were, aside from Yosef, obviously. He was the king, he was the Moshel. But all the other Shvatim were enslaved. And then ultimately, Yosef's children were also enslaved because the Torah tells us they forgot all about Yosef. And then, the only ones who were given refuge were Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi had every right to say, you have your problems to worry about. We're fine. We're living in a different community. This is not our problem. But Levi said that that is an unacceptable attitude. And the Shalar Kadosh writes that Levi decided they really needed to empathize, they needed to identify with the struggles of the rest of the Jewish community, even though it was irrelevant to them. So what did Levi do? He named his children with very particular names to give him a constant reminder of what was going on in the greater Jewish community. And he names them Gershon, Kehas, Umerari. What is that all about? Gershom, the Torah says, is Ger Heim Be'eretz Lo Lahem. The Jewish people are wandering in a town, in a community, in a land that is not theirs. Kehas, what does the name stand for? She Shinehem Keos, that the teeth of the Jewish people were black from work, from soot, from ashes, from dirt. They were so weak. And Merari is Vayimaru Es Chayehem Ba'avoda Kasha, to remind him consistently of the fact that the Jewish people were suffering, that they were being enslaved. And even though it was not relevant to him, says the Shalah, the Torah wants us to know that when you have a situation that confronts the Jewish people, even if it is not relevant to you, name your children in a way that will remind you. Every time Levi called his little children from the playground, from the sandbox, he wanted to remind himself of what's going on. Yes, my children are able to play outside, but everybody else's kids are not. And this was a constant reminder. This was Levi making sure that he had that built-in system to always be reminded of the struggle of the Jewish people. There's a story that's told about the riots in 1929 in Hebron. Terrible riots, terrible bloodshed at the time. Unprovoked attack. In 1929, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Hebron Yeshiva was Rabbi Yecheskel Sarna. And he said the following. He said that when Rav Kook heard about the riot, Rav Kook actually fainted. Rav Kook fainted on the spot when he heard about it. And Rav Yecheskel Sarna said that he felt so uncomfortable. Here I am, the Rosh Yeshiva, the leader of this yeshiva. These are my Talmidim who were just murdered. And what was my reaction? I cried. I was upset. But I didn't faint. I didn't pass out. It means the tragedy was still a little bit removed from me. It means the tragedy did not totally hit me the way it should have, even though I'm so close to it. Rav Kook is a sensitive person. He understands where he is in the context of the Jewish community. And as a result of that, when he heard about this tragedy, he didn't know anybody who suffered the tragedy. He was not personally acquainted with any of them, but he fainted. He fainted because it is his problem, because it's something that bothered him terribly. And that, said Rav Yecheskel Sarna, is what to learn from. You contrast all of this with a very prominent personality that we just read about on Shavuos. We read about the story of Rus HaMoavia. What is the story of Rus? Rus was a great woman, but she didn't start off that way. The story in Megillas Rus does not begin with her. The story begins with a very prominent individual by the name of Elimelech. Elimelech, the Gemara tells us, was a leader of his generation. He was from a very prestigious, prominent family. Everybody knew who he was. He was the Gadol HaDor. He was a very wealthy person. Everybody trusted him. Everybody looked up to this person. And what happens? The Psukim tell us, I didn't put it on here. Psukim tell us, Vayhi bimei shvot ha-shovti vayhi ra'av ba'aretz. There was a famine in the land. And what did Elimelech do? Elimelech goes with his wife and his two sons. His wife's name was, what? His wife's name, we'll see in a second. He goes with his wife and two children. What was his wife's name? Naomi. And he had two sons. What were his children's names? Mahlon v'Kilion. We don't know so much about them because they die at the very beginning of the story. So he has two sons, and they travel away from Eretz Yisrael. What happens then? Immediately, Vayamas Elimelech, Eshes Naomi. They travel out of Eretz Yisrael, and suddenly Elimelech dies. Doesn't say that he was sick. So why did Elimelech die? What happened? He was a healthy person. And then, immediately after that, his wife feels she has to marry off the kids. So she finds two wonderful women. She finds Ruth and Arpah, who are going to be her daughters-in-law. And suddenly, very unexpectedly, those two sons die as well. And the Medrash asks, why did he die? Nowhere does it say that he was sick. And all we seem to know about him is, he lived in Israel, he left Israel at the time, and he decided to relocate his family to somewhere else, and immediately they died. Why? What happened? Says the Medrash. The reason why is Shehipa Liban Shel Yisrael Aleihem. Because he crushed the spirits of the Jewish people when he left. And the Medrash gives a mashal. Medrash says, imagine you have a very simple town with one ashir, with one very wealthy individual in the town. And everybody says to themselves, you know, we're all living fine, everything's okay, we have just what we need. Should there ever be an economic crisis, should there ever be a problem, we know that we have one person in town who can take care of us. We know that somebody's going to step up, they'll run a soup kitchen, they have enough money to take care of us, so we're all making it by, but if something goes wrong, that person will help us. And one day, a terrible thing happens in the community, the economy tanks, everybody loses their money, and they notice that one of the members of the family of this prominent individual is walking through the marketplace in ripped clothing, trying to find something to eat. And that was the moment that destroyed the spirit of the people. Because if even a member of that family is here peddling around the town trying to do the same thing all the rest of us are doing, it means we're in a really bad position. It means we cannot even rely on that individual who we always thought was going to be our backup, was going to be our safety. And that's what happened with Elimelech. Vayihi rav ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land. Elimelech had it good. He had everything he needed. And he turns to his family and he says, as the Medrash writes, what am I going to do? Kol Yisrael misavavim bepischi. I'm going to have all these Jews waiting online outside of my house for a handout. Zeh bekupaso v'zeh bekupaso. I'm going to have to start giving charity to this one and to the other one. I'm not interested. He picks up his family and he moves out of the land as not to deal with the struggle of the Jewish people. You know what happens? Vayamas Elimelech. What good are you? Why do we need you here in the world? Is that what you're here for? So that when tragedy strikes and you have the ability to help, you're just going to walk away and say, I'll create a better situation for my family and I don't care about anyone else? You're worried that people are going to wait online for a handout? You're worried that you're going to have the ability to help others get through this crisis? And you walk away from such an opportunity? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you money. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you skills. He gave you leadership. He gave you the ability to uplift the community and you're walking away? Here's your moment. This is why I gave it all to you. And here's the test. And you failed. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't need people like you in the world. Vayamas Elimelech. Elimelech dies. Because he's useless. Because he failed his mission. Because he didn't understand that the point of being here in the world is to be able to identify with the struggles of other people and use our talents to be able to help them. What a gift. What an opportunity. And you don't have to be Elimelech to be able to do that. We are all in a position of strength to help other people in their time of need. Doesn't mean you have to give them money. Doesn't mean you have to give them something physical. Sometimes giving them an ear, letting them cry on your shoulder, sometimes letting someone just talk to you is the greatest gift we can give. And this is why the Shulchan Aruch writes this halacha. is quoted the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that when the community is in a time of distress, we have to identify with that. Now says the Mishnah Brura, the only time that I have an obligation to identify with that is if it's a situation where maybe I can help. She'ef shalahoil, where maybe I think I can do something to make a difference. And the Mishnah Brura outlines, what does it mean I can make a difference? Listen carefully. The first thing he writes is, bitfila. This is in the Mishnah Brura. You have a community in distress and you say to yourself, what can I do? I don't have extra money to give to help them. Somebody had a fire in their house. I'm not going to rebuild the house. I don't know how to make an insurance claim. I can't really help. You can help. Says the Mishnah Brura, the first thing you can do is tefillah. Somebody's sick in the family, and you're not a doctor, and you have no connections to the hospital to help them out, and you can't do Bikur Cholim because it's too difficult for you, or because the family maybe won't appreciate your visit, you can do something. You could be mispalo. You can offer a tefillah. That's called helping. Says the Mishnah Brura, secondly, betinus. Amazing. Who would have thought of that? Maybe take a day of fasting upon yourself. It's well known that the Chafetz Chaim, when people used to come to him with their difficulties, he used to fast. My grandfather used to tell a story. My grandfather met the Chafetz Chaim on one occasion, my mother's father. It's an amazing story. He was learning in yeshiva in Europe, and he came confronted with an issue about the Russian army, and he didn't know what to do. He was going to be drafted into the army, the Polish army, Russian army, something, and he didn't know what to do. It was before the war. And somebody told him he should go to the Chafetz Chaim and ask him for a bracha. My grandfather was scared, but he traveled to Radin and he went to talk to the Chafetz Chaim. He gets to the house and he sees the door is open a little bit. Knocks on the door, nobody's answering. So he peeks inside to see the door was open, so he figured he can go in. He looks inside and he sees the Chafetz Chaim is sitting by the table by himself with no one else in the house. He was already a very elderly person, couldn't take care of himself. And the Chafetz Chaim notices that there's a guest and he welcomes him in. And the Chafetz Chaim, before my grandfather said a word, the Chafetz Chaim turned to him and he said, my family left for the day, they went to do things, and I can't really take care of myself so well, but I need a cup of tea. Would you mind, before we get into a conversation, can you make me a cup of tea? My grandfather was ecstatic, gets to serve the Chafetz Chaim. So the Chafetz Chaim told him, that's where you heat up the water, this is where we keep the cups, that's where we have the tea. He told him where to get a sugar cube. And my grandfather prepared the whole thing. He was terrified of the Chafetz Chaim. He didn't say a word yet. And he's doing everything, putting together the tea, comes back to the table. And the Chafetz Chaim told him, I'm not strong enough to hold the cup. So if you don't mind, can you hold the cup? With your other hand, you have to hold the back of my neck and keep going back and forth to serve me the tea. So that's what he did. He was Meshamish the Chafetz Chaim. And obviously, you can't drink a tea so quickly. It's very hot. So as they were waiting, the Chafetz Chaim started talking on his own without my grandfather saying anything. And my grandfather said that he had come to the Chafetz Chaim with three particular questions. One of them was about the army. The other two he never shared. But he said he didn't say a word, and in that brief conversation while he was serving the tea, the Chafetz Chaim answered all three of his questions without being asked anything. And after he was done with the whole tea, Chafetz Chaim turned to him and he said, is there anything else I can do for you? It's well known that the Chafetz Chaim had a sense of Ruach HaKodesh. There was something very uniquely special about the Chafetz Chaim. But the story is told, my grandfather used to tell it, that Chafetz Chaim in his old age had a couple that came to him who couldn't have children. And they were very distressed, very distraught. And the Chafetz Chaim began to cry after they left. And they asked him, why are you crying? So he said, you all think I'm crying because this terrible situation. But I'll tell you the reason why I'm crying. See, in the past, when I used to have more strength, when a couple like this would come to me, I would fast for 40 days. And that's why they had a Yeshua. But now I'm old, and I'm not in a position to do that. and I feel so sad that I can't help them. That was the Chafetz Chaim. Says the Mishneh Berurah, what does it mean to help people? What does it mean that I feel I can identify with the struggle that they're going through? Sometimes it means tefillah. Sometimes it means tainus. And sometimes, says the Mishneh Berurah, it means giving money. That's the third option. Giving money is sometimes the easy way out. I'll write a check and I'm done with this problem. I don't want to hear from it again. That's not the way it goes. Says the Mishneh Berurah, writing a check is the third option. The first one is tefillah, is taking it seriously, is really thinking about it. I was so moved. A couple of weeks ago, there are a number of members of our shul who go away for the winter time. Some go to Eretz Yisrael, some go to Florida. So somebody who just came back from their winter trip, Pesach time, came over to me on Chol HaMoed Pesach and asked the question. They said, you spoke 2 years ago in shul on Rosh Hashanah morning. I had no recollection. They said, in the middle of your speech, you said, we were about to read the story of an Akara, of a woman who couldn't have children. We read that on Rosh Hashanah. And you mentioned that there was a family that you knew that was married over 10 years and couldn't have children. And I know this family very well. And in the context of what I was speaking about, I said maybe as a tzibur, we can have in mind this year, Rosh Hashanah, this woman and her husband. And I said their names. I don't know about anyone else in the room, but this man took it seriously. Matzei Rosh Hashanah, he texted me and he asked, can you please give me the names again? I want to daven for them. I said, sure. He came to me 2 years later, 2.5 years later, on Chol HaMoed Pesach. He said, I was away for the winter. I haven't seen you. I just want to check in. How's this woman doing? And he tells me her name. Whatever happened, I've been davening for her every day. I was sad to report that nothing changed, that unfortunately they still don't have children. But I was so moved by a person who really cares that for 2.5 years, he's been davening for this woman and her husband every single day. When was the last time you committed yourself to a cause like that? To actually daven for a person every single day? So you say a little Tehillim here, you say a little bit there, we do a Hafrash Aschala, we do a whatever. To daven every single day for 2.5 years and to care enough to follow up with me and ask how the person's doing? It's something we all have the ability to do, says the Mishneh Berurah. So this is one interpretation of our Mishnah, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur, don't separate yourself from a difficult situation that is unfolding in the community. But there is, however, an alternative understanding in this Mishnah, and that's going to be our focus for the remainder of today's Shira. Beni Yonah writes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, look at number Dalet. Bishasha HaTzibur Oskim HaTorah V'Mitzvos. What does it mean, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur? It's not talking about tragedy. Why do we always have to talk about sad things? It's talking about the following. If you have a tzibur that gets together to learn Torah or to daven, who keser kol olamim v'kavod kol memshalto, do you realize that at the time that a group of people come together to learn, you are crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's the greatest moment of the Ribono Shel Olam's Malchus. Do you understand that? Berov Am Hadras Melech, what does it mean? They're having a coronation in England this week, right? This weekend. And all the discussions, how is President Herzog going to go, and how is he going to keep Shabbos, and how is the Chief Rabbi Mervis going to get there, all these problems. Imagine if you had a coronation with nobody there. What kind of coronation would that be? Irrelevant. Who would care? If there was no media coverage and there were no people there, it wouldn't be so exciting. It means something because the whole community comes out and we make a big deal out of it. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's what it means, Berov Am Hadras Melech. We coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. So if there's a group of people who are coming together to coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they're coming to learn Torah, or they're coming to daven together, says Rabbeinu Yonah, you should join them to show how much it means, the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to show how meaningful it is to you, to show that you participate in that. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, ki berov am ne'asafim l'kayim mitzvaso hadras melechu ve'ein roi lifrosh mehem. Don't separate from them. If there's something going on in a spiritual matter in the community, be a part of it. I don't know how many of you felt that this past week. Everybody was saying, it was so amazing. Tuesday night we had a celebration of the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. It's not what everyone said, it's the way I present it. We had such an amazing celebration of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Medinas Yisrael, 75 years, what a gift to our generation. So many people came out. Everybody said, you know what? Why don't so many people come out to lots of other things? Everyone's excited. So many people came. You know the reason why so many people aren't at other things? Because you don't come. Right? Berovam Hadras Melech means, yes, it would be meaningful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu if we all came together, not for Yom HaTzma'ut, but to daven, or to learn Torah, or to do other things, to celebrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's central role in our lives. Forget Yom HaTzma'ut for a moment. That's not the religion. The religion is Torah and mitzvos. So we came together last week to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I hope that it was meaningful for everyone. But beyond that, we have opportunities all the time to do that. And says Rabbeinu Yonah, don't separate yourself. Don't allow yourself to be left out of that great experience. And says the Mishnah Berurah, this is really something that's important. Of course, learning Torah by myself is always wonderful. And doing things alone is always great. But to do it together with a community and to come together is something that will enhance the level of what that Torah study is going to be all about. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah advises all of us, Lilmod b'chabura, to come together and learn as a group, to go and coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu as we do that, as we learn Torah. That is the greatest thing to do. One of the great Rishonim in Barcelona in Spain in the 1300s was the Rashbeitz. The Rashbeitz was Rabbi Shimon ben Sebach du Ra'on, and he writes about what happens when a community comes together and they learn. What happens when a community comes together and they daven together? And he quotes the Gemara Maseches Brachos, Eima sai eis ratzon. We say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers our tefillah at an eis ratzon, at a time that is an auspicious time. When is it an auspicious time, says the Gemara, B'shah shehatzibur mispalalim, when the tzibur comes together to daven. Well, says the Gemara, what if I don't have the ability to come to shul all the time? For whatever reason. I'm too busy. I have to be at work early. I'm not going to be able to make it to shul. So what do I do? That means that my tefillah is not accepted. It means it's not an eis ratzon. Says the Gemara, there's an option B. Daven at home, but daven at the same time as the tzibur. Don't just daven haphazardly on your own. If you know that there's a minyan in the shul at 8 o'clock and 8:30 and 7:30 and 7 o'clock, choose one of them and daven along with them, even though you're not there. But you have the ability to share in that experience of the tzibur davening, at least in some way. So why is it so important, why is it so significant and valuable that I include myself in the tefillah with other people? In fact, you'll notice whenever we daven, the Gemara says we should always daven in a plural conjugation. Rifa'enu Hashem v'nei rafei. What if, Rachmana litzlan, I'm the one who's sick? Why don't I say it in the individual, in the singular? Why do I say Rifa'enu? Why do I say Barech Aleinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give all of us a parnasa? Hashivenu avinu l'sarasecha, we should do tshuva. I need to do tshuva. What am I worrying about you? The answer is because whenever we formulate a tefillah, we say it in the plural. Because we connect ourselves to everybody else who's in need. I'm not the only one who needs to do tshuva, I imagine. I'm not the only one who needs a geula. I'm not the only one who needs a parnasa. Lots of people do. So why is it important that we do it this way? Why do we formulate a tefillah in that way? And why is it that we do everything with a tzibur? Why is it important that this is the way it should be done? Why should we come to a shul and daven with others or daven at the same time as a minyan is davening? So Reb Simcha Bunim Yipshischa gave the following mashal to understand it. He said, imagine you give someone a loan, $50,000, they have to start off a business, and you give them a loan. Fine. You give them a certain time when they have to pay it back. Time comes, I'm an honest person, I come to pay back. For some reason, the wire transfer is not working. I take $50,000 out of the bank, and I go and I show up with $50,000 in cash to your house. Okay, it's a little uncomfortable. I don't want $50,000 in cash, but fine. And I start looking through. There's packages, rolls of money, and I don't know what you call that. Wads of cash, I guess. And I start looking through and I see $100 bills and more $100 bills and more and more. And I notice that somewhere in the middle there's a $5 bill that's like rubbed out and not of such good quality. And you probably won't be able to use it because it was ripped and then it was taped back up. It's what you got from the bank, but you know, if you go into a store, they probably won't take it. When I'm talking about a $50,000 loan that was just returned, do I care about the $5 bill that's probably defected? It doesn't make a difference. I'm going to ignore it. I'm not going to go back to the person who just gave me the money and say, hey, you cheated me $5. I'm going to say, $5 doesn't really matter. It doesn't make a difference. Yes, I can't use it. And yes, I'm going to throw it out now. But I got back the $50,000. It's not even going to register in the whole sum of money that was given back to me. Let's say I go to a store and I want to buy a chocolate bar. I ask them, how much is it? They tell me $4.50. And I give them that $5 bill. They're going to turn to me and say, we can't use this. What do you mean you can't use it? And they turn to me and they say, well, this dollar bill is so damaged, it's so defected, it's ripped up and taped back together, it's not worth anything. So how come when I go to a store and I'm buying a candy bar and I give them a $5 bill, they won't accept it? And when somebody comes and returns $50,000 to me and there's a $5 bill in there that is so damaged and defected, how come I accept it? What's the difference? Difference is because in the context of $50,000, $5 doesn't matter. But when all you're talking about is $5, then it does matter. When the whole exchange is only going to be that amount, it has to be the right amount, and it has to be something that is worth something. Says Reb Simcha Bunim Ipshischa, you stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you say, I need this, and I need that, and I want a refuah, and I want a parnasa, and I want a shidduch, and I want all the different things in life that people can ask for. Sounds great, right? Well, if you're standing alone, you are the defected $5 bill that's standing in front of the clerk and asking that they accept your money, and they're going to turn to you and say, this? Why would I accept this? This horrible tefillah that you had no kavana, you skipped half the words, you don't know how to say them, you're not really paying attention to what you're saying, you don't understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you don't even get what's going on during your tefillah, why would we accept this? But come along with $50,000. Come along with the rest of the community that's davening for the same thing. And guess what? Suddenly HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't notice your deficiency, it doesn't make a difference. It's negligible in the greater amount of everything else that's there, of all the other things that are coming in, and that won't even be noticed. The problem with your $5 bill is not an issue. Says Reb Simcha Bunim Ipshischa, this is why we always try to include ourselves in a larger tzibur whenever we daven. Do you really believe that you have so much kavana when you daven? Do you really believe that the kavana that the Vilna Gaon had or the Chafetz Chaim had when they daven, do you think we're anything close to that? Of course not. So I know that my tefillah is deficient. I know that my avodas Hashem, that my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my yiras shamayim, is not where it should be. And I'm on a lifelong journey to try to get to a place where I'll be better. But right now I'm not there. So what should I do? I should stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this embarrassing state and ask Him to accept my $5 bill that I know is not acceptable? Or should I do something else to go along with 50,000 other people who are davening and present my defective $5 bill in the context of 50,000. That is why we do that. All of this is true. To be a part of the tzibur is very important. However, it goes without saying, and the Mishnah Berurah writes this as well, if you have a tzibur ra, if you have a tzibur that is doing something wrong, obviously you don't go along with it. You stand up to the pressure and you do the right thing and you make the right decision. This is what the Navi Yirmiyahu is living at a time where he's so disappointed with what's going on, the state of the Jewish people, not the physical state, but the spiritual state of what was happening at the time. He was so upset. And he says, "Mi itneni b'midbar malon archim ve'ezva asami ve'elcha me'itam." Just get me away from these people. Let me go into the desert and live by myself. I'm not interested in being a part of this. And that's something that we find, says the Mishnah Berurah, of course, we should always be part of the tzibur. We should include ourselves. We should never single ourselves out, but at the same time, we have to look at what the tzibur is doing. And we have to judge whether it's appropriate for us to be a part of this tzibur. And if not, maybe switch your tzibur and become part of a different one. Get a better circle of friends. Get a different group of people who are really on a journey to try to grow in their lives and to try to become better people. So this general discussion about al tifrosh min hatzibur, when there's a spiritual matter happening, leads us into a very practical halachic discussion that I'm sure is going to make some people uncomfortable, and that is about breakaway house minyanim. So this is a real issue. It's a real issue that is discussed in all the poskim, in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Magen Avraham, in the Mishnah Berurah, and in every other posik that talks about anything about daily life. They all talk about our house minyanim. So what do they say? Let's see. We start off with a Gemara. No, we don't. Sorry. We start off, the Gemara does say, somebody didn't like that. The Gemara does say that there are certain things that members of a community are able to force other members to participate in. So for example, it wouldn't be a Jewish community without a mikveh. How can we have a community without a mikveh? What's going to be? I'm at a stage of life where I don't need the mikveh, or I'm not married and therefore I don't need the mikveh, whatever the reason is. So who has to pay for the mikveh? Says the Gemara, we tax all the members of the community equally. Doesn't matter whether you plan to use it, whether you don't plan to use it. Everybody has to pay for this service. Why? Because we cannot have a Jewish community without it. And similarly, the Gemara says, if I have a community that doesn't have a shul, what kind of community is that without a shul? So, even though I'm handicapped, and I can't leave my house, and I'm never able to use the services of the shul, I have to participate in the communal infrastructure. I have to pay for the shul equally like everybody else. Now, do I have to pay annual membership? I don't know. But I have to contribute to the needs of the community the same way everybody else does, even if I know from the outset that I will not use it. But still, since this is a part of the fabric of what a community is, we all need to participate. That's what the Gemara says, that's quoted in the Rambam, and that is the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins as well, both in Aruch Chaim, as well as in Choshen Mishpat, that we all have to participate in community needs, even if we personally are not going to need them. Something that I find very fascinating is, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach expanded that in our generation, and he said, when you have an institution that is made for children with special needs, or individuals who have special needs, and they're not able to fit into the educational system, who should pay for that? Who should pay for that? Would you say it's the obligation of those parents? They have to be mechanic their kids. I send my kids to yeshiva and I pay tuition, so if they need to send their kids to a special yeshiva, they need to pay the tuition. Or would you say, no, this is a communal responsibility. We all have members of our community who have special needs, and therefore, even if it's not my child, I still need to help participate for the betterment of the entire community. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach argues, and Rav Moshe Feinstein writes a similar variation, that in our generation, it has become accepted that we take care of individuals with special needs. That was not the case 40 or 50 years ago, as we know. And because it has become an expected norm event in every community that we do something, maybe it's not where it should be, but we try to do whatever we can to help those with special needs, that has now become a necessity of a Jewish community. And the same way a community needs to have a shul, and a mikveh, and a hospital, and a doctor, so too we need to have an opportunity for special needs individuals to be taken care of. That to me is amazing. It's an amazing breakthrough psak that just shows how far our community has come in the last 50 years. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful that this is the sentiment of the great poskim of our generation. So every community needs to have a shul. Says one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, the Rivash, also in Barcelona in the 1300s, he writes, in the Tshuvas HaRivash, let's read it together, number, hey, we're not going to read the whole thing, but you can read it on your own. Me'es Husar HaTamid, once we no longer had the opportunity to bring a carbon tamid in the Beis HaMikdash every day, Hayakofer Nafshosenu, what are we going to do now to try to atone for ourselves? Ulahasam Chatas Babadosenu La'azavnu Elokeinu, don't think we have now abandoned the Ribono Shel Olam. Just because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash doesn't mean we don't connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hishu lanu achara bracha avodah shabalev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left us something to connect with Him. And what is that? Avodah shabalev zu tfila. He has left us the venue of tfila, which allows us and affords us the opportunity to speak with Him, to connect with Him. Umeyes gala kavod beis mikdashenu v'tifartenu, hine beis tfila yikare mikdash ma'at. And we refer to our shuls as a mikdash ma'at, it's a miniature Beis HaMikdash, in the place of a Beis HaMikdash. V'nes v'shaman adivei amim, am Elohei Avram, lases kavod ishmo, v'nekadesh b'chvodo. And we come together to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to elevate and uplift His name. Va'ata, hu gadli v'shamati, says the Rivash, it has come to my attention. Yesh ben eichem tzas anashim. There are some people in our community, he says, acharei bitzam libam holech, they're going just based on whatever their heart tells them to do. They wake up early in the morning, shogim laterif, and they feel they need to make a parnasa. Yisovavu yir lamalachtam, they run right away to the office early in the morning. V'lo yidnu leiv lalechas beis hatfila. L'kabal aleim o malchus shamayim. And they don't daven. And they don't go to shul. U'levakesh me'el achlam. They don't bother to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give them a parnasa. Omehashem uvisibasam nisparda achavila ve'ein da yud hatzrichem l'chol davar shebekdusha. Writes the Rivas, shav lahem mashkim ekum. Samu bisar zeroam umehashem yasir liba. They have convinced themselves that they are going to be successful on their own without the service, without the needs to include HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their lives. And the Rivash goes on to explain that this is a big mistake. And he says that it's not something that should ever be acceptable in a community. He goes on to say that we should put a communal knas, we should put a tax on a person, not a tax, a fine on a person who chooses not to come to shul in the morning. Because this has to be the beginning of our day. This has to be the frame of our day. This has to be the way we go into business. We first go to shul. We daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're mekabel ol malchus shamayim. We ask the Ribono Shel Olam to help us in everything we're going to do that day. And then we move on. Now, doesn't always work. Some people, at Tzarech Parnasa, have to be there early in the morning and they can't come to shul. Understandable. But we need to daven. Maybe it means you have to cut down the tefillah. Maybe it means you have to daven at a minyan that might go a little bit more quickly, or you have to daven at a minyan that skips parts of the tefillah. It could be, but we have to daven. We have to daven. Now you may say that sounds strange, to skip parts of the tefillah. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Aleph, Tov lomar ma'at b'kavana mehar b'shalo b'kavana. My father says every year, if it were up to him, they would take out part of the slichos in every shul. What good is it? We try to say all the pages of slichos, meanwhile we say nothing. Wouldn't it be better if we allocate, let's say, I don't know how long, Gabay, how long is it? 20 minutes for slichos in the morning? 25 minutes, depends on the minyan. Right, if you allocate X amount of time for slichos, then why don't we choose? We're going to say in 20 minutes, we're going to say this one and the other one, and that's it. But we're going to say them slowly. We're actually going to say every word. Shulchan Aruch says it would be better to do that than to try to say everything and have no kavana at all. Now, best would be if we would allocate 45 minutes for slichas, but that's not what we're going to do. People have to go to work. We understand it. So what do? We allocate a certain amount of time, but what we should do is choose the ones that we can actually say the words. Give people enough time to follow along in the English so they can know what they're saying. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. If you feel you're in a position where you can't daven everything, you're running out to a meeting, you're doing what you have to do, taking care of the grandchildren, wherever you might be in life, then skip parts of the tefillah. But at least the parts that you say should be b'kavana. So that's the Rivash writes here. Now the problem what we're discussing is not what the Rivash says. The Rivash says there are people who aren't coming to daven. There are people who aren't davening at all before they go to work. What we're describing is, no, we have a group of people who do value tefillah b'tzibur, who do understand that they need to daven, but they choose to do it outside of the shul. So what's wrong with that? I have a minyan. It's on my block. It's very convenient. And I go every day. I'm very consistent. What's the problem? That's not what the Rivash is describing. He's talking about a group of people who don't come at all, who don't daven at all. So what's the problem? Let's turn the page. And you will see a tshuva in the Radvaz. Before we get to the Radvaz, Rashi has an amazing comment. Rashi writes in the Sefer HaOra. It's not a well-known Sefer of Rashi, but Rashi says the following. The discussion there that Rashi's talking about is about Rosh Chodesh and saying Halal be Rosh Chodesh. It's a big discussion in Shulchan Aruch whether somebody who's davening biyachidus on Rosh Chodesh is supposed to say Halal or not. Do we assume that that is only limited to a tzibur that davens on Rosh Chodesh? Or do you say that that is any individual who davens on Rosh Chodesh should say Halal as well? That's the discussion. Obviously on Yom Tov, that's not the same discussion. On Yom Tov, we have an obligation to say Halal. And therefore, on Yom Tov, everybody has to say, regardless of where you find yourself. But on Rosh Chodesh, that is a discussion. Okay, So Rashi happens to be of the opinion that if someone is davening biyachidus on Rosh Chodesh, they should not say halal. For whatever reason. Beyond the context of our discussion here, but that's what Rashi says. Now Rashi discusses, what happens if I have 10 people who go make a minyan outside of shul, in someone's backyard or in someone's basement? Should they say halal on Rosh Chodesh? Interesting question. What's the question? Aren't they at Tzibur? Why is that a shaila? Rashi says, well, if you're davening biyachidus, if you're davening by yourself, you don't say halal on Rosh Chodesh. If you're davening in shul, you say halal on Rosh Chodesh. What if you're in that middle ground? You're not davening biyachidus, but you're not davening in shul. I'm davening in someone's backyard. I'm davening in someone's basement. So what then? Says Rashi, I'm reading you his words, Asara shepirshu minat zibur, shemispalalim achori besakneses liatzman. If you have 10 people who are davening with a minion, but they're not davening in the shul, they're davening in someone's house, they're davening in a basement. Harei hein ki yechidin. Says Rashi, they're like they're davening biyachidus. And says Rashi, they wouldn't say halal Rosh Chodesh. Harei hein ki yechidin. What do you mean? But they're not biyachidin. They're a minion. But it doesn't matter, says Rashi. They're like yechidin. That's not a tzibur. Even if you have 100 people, it's not a tzibur. It's not a beis haknesses. It's not a tzibur. So even though you're davening with 10 other men, it doesn't make a difference, says Rashi. Says the Radvaz. A very notable, prominent voice in this whole discussion is the Radvaz, one of the very early achronim, in the end of the period of the Rishonim. He was passed away in 1573, so he was like right on the cutoff there. So the Radvaz writes the following. Let's read it together. The Radvaz says, actually, what he's discussing is there were two divergent groups in his community who had two different sets of minhagim. Some of them were from Tunisia and others were from somewhere else. I forgot where. And he discusses that one group wanted to break away from the other and start their own shul. And the question was, is that appropriate? So, it's a good question. And it's a question that has come up ever since. And the Radvaz says that in this particular case, it would make a lot of sense for them to break apart and to start their own shul. Aye, the Radvaz says, don't I believe Barov HaMadras Melech, why should they start their own shul? It's better for everybody to daven together. So why would they break away? Writes the Radvaz as follows, number above. Halo Kasha, that's not a question. Dikivan Shehem Libos Chalukim. Since they have so much friction and animosity between these two groups, since they're always fighting in shul about this minhag and the other minhag, I don't want your chazan to go up and I don't want my chazan to go up, everyone's fighting. Therefore, he says, "Ein kilusa nolan yafeh." HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to hear such a tefillah. So it wouldn't make sense for them to stay together in a shul. So if you have a community where they have two different minhagim, and because of that it is considered such a sense of discord and so much friction is being created, then of course, says the Radvaz, you break apart. And of course, you start your own shul. However, if that's not the justification, if that's not the circumstance, and the reason you're breaking apart is simply for convenience purposes, and not because there's any issue per se, says the Radvaz, there would be no heter. This Radvaz is quoted lahalacha in the Shulchan Aruch. It's not just the tshuva in the Radvaz, it's quoted lahalacha in the Shulchan Aruch. The same Shulchan Aruch that says we should keep Shabbos, same Shulchan Aruch that says we should keep Taras HaMashpacha, is the same Shulchan Aruch that says we are not allowed to have a breakaway minion. As simple as that. There is no justification. Absolutely no justification, except if there are divergent minhagim, and as a result of that, people are going to be uncomfortable davening together. Or for another example, says the Magen Avraham, or says the Mishnah Berurah, if I daven in a shul where people are talking the whole davening, or I feel people are not davening properly, then of course I should go somewhere else. Why would you stay there? Who wants to daven in such a shul? But if that's not the situation, says the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Radvaz, there would be no justification at all. Let's read the Shulchan Aruch himself, number ches. Yishtadel adam leispalo bebeis haknesses im hatzibur. Person should always try to daven in a shul with a tzibur. It doesn't always work out, but we should try. Says the Magen Avraham there on the page. Afal pi sheyachal leispalo bebeis obiyud. You think I'm making this up? The Magen Avraham describes our case. And he says, even though I can daven at home with a minion, and even though I'll be fine, and it's called tefillah b'tzibur, mikal makom berov hamhadras melech, we still say that it's inappropriate to do so. And the right thing to do is to come to the shul and daven together. Let's go back to our example of the coronation, right? Imagine if this Shabbos, when they have the coronation in England, every citizen of the country decides they're going to stay home and watch it on TV. So I'm giving kavod to the melech by watching. I'm not showing that I don't care. I'm not showing that I'm not interested. Of course I'm very interested. But, you know, I don't want to be there. So many people around. Well, I have to, you know, take a train or a bus or park my car who knows where and go all the way there. Imagine if nobody would show up. Everybody would watch in their own homes, but nobody would show up. And not just in my own home. I'm going to watch with all my friends in my house. I'm going to invite my whole block to watch on my screen in my house, that we should all do it together. Would that be a kavod lamelech? No. It would be an absolute embarrassment to the melech that nobody showed up. So why is it that we understand that, but we have such a hard time understanding this? The melech malchei amlachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Migdash Ma'at, which is the Beis HaKnesses, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu resides, it's where He waits for us every single day. So we understand the mashal about England and the coronation, but somehow we don't understand that making the minyan in my house is the same as watching the coronation on TV. What's the difference? It's the same thing. Berovam Hadras Melech is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of all of us. And that's where Rabbeinu Yonah says, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. So much so, the Shulchan Aruch gives an amazing psak in Hilchos Megillah, Hilchos Purim. The Shulchan Aruch writes, we know that Talmud Torah Keneged Kula. We know that the greatest value of everything is learning Torah. And the worst Aveira in the world is, I guess, Avodah Zarah Gilei Raya Shvichas Damim. But otherwise, there's another one that the Shulchan Aruch says is terrible, and that is Bittul Torah. If you're in the middle of learning Torah, seriously, you shouldn't distract yourself for other things. Bittul Torah is a terrible thing. Okay, we take that very seriously. Fine. Says the Shulchan Aruch, what happens if I have an entire yeshiva of people learning, and now it's time to lay in the Megillah? I have 100 people in the yeshiva, everyone's learning very seriously, and it's time to lay in the Megillah. Well, we have to lay in the Megillah, so we have to stop. Fine, everybody understands. We daven Maariv, we lay in the Megillah, we'll go back to learning. Sounds good? No. Says the Gemara Maseches Megillah, it's quoted Lahalach and Shulchan Aruch. Look here in number Tes. Mevatlin Talmud Torah the Shema and Mikra Megillah. We're going to be Mevatil Torah study in order to hear the Megillah. Now, what does that mean? Of course, we stop learning Torah to do everything. You stop learning Torah to daven shacharis and mincha and maariv. You don't skip the mitzvah just because you're learning. So what does it mean? The Mishnah Berurah explains, quoted in the Gemara, what it means is, even though Torah study is very important, and bittul Torah is a major issue, and we would never want to distract people from learning just for no reason, but if they're learning in a Beis Medrash and there's a shul down the block that's going to have a large crowd of people learning the Megillah, we will tell all the 100 people here to stop learning, take out an extra half hour of their time to walk to and from the shul, and they should go hear the Megillah and Shul. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Even though it's at the expense of Bittul Torah, which we're not so quick to do. So comes Mikra Megillah in our community, and we make Minyanim in our house to lay in the Megillah. Now, sometimes we make the Minyan in our house to lay in the Megillah because we're afraid we're not going to hear the words in Shul. Or we're afraid we're not going to get a seat. Or there's going to be too much noise, too many kids running around. Okay, that's a good justification. But stam to make a minyan of Mikra Megillah in my house just because of convenience? We're willing to be mevatel Torah derabin to tell them all to come to shul. They have 100 people learning together in a Beis Medrash. They're not allowed to lay in the Megillah there. It's the Gemara says, it's the Shulchan Aruch. We're willing to do that in order to get everyone in the same shul together. So this is what the Shulchan Aruch writes, and that's the way Rabbeinu Yonah understands our Mishnah. When Hillel tells us, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur, perhaps, says Rabbeinu Yonah, what we're talking about here is not separating ourselves from the Tzibur in a time of tragedy. That's one aspect. But beyond that, this is relevant every day of Jewish life. Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur means when the Tzibur around you is involved in some kind of spiritual endeavor, when they are doing something to show the coronation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with tefillah, or with Talmud Torah, or whatever it is, you need to be a part of that. Why would you want to separate yourself? And as Reb Simcha Bunim Mipshischa said, you don't want to be that defective $5 bill that's standing alone. You don't want HaKadosh Baruch Hu paying too much attention to you. You know that on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we have the minhag, I'm over time, we have the minhag that the chazan who goes up to Daven Shachar says HaMelech from their seat, and only then do they go up. Why? Why do we do that? Because who wants to single themselves out on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? Who wants to be the one to stand up in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, here I am, and look at me, and please pay very close attention to me. I would much rather blend in with the crowd and not be singled out, especially on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And I'll say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, you promised that the Jewish community is going to survive. I'm part of the Jewish community right now. Once the Ribbono Shalom starts looking at me and pointing a finger at me and looking through everything that went on, not so comfortable. The Chazan, before going up, says to the entire Tzibur, I'm not so comfortable. I'm not so comfortable. And when I start saying HaMelech, I'll do it at my seat together with everybody else. And then we basically push the Chazan up and say, well, somebody has to daven for the Yamud. And because of a lack of another option, the Chazan gets up there. But this is not a concert. This is not a time to show off my beautiful voice. It's not a time to say, I'm singling myself out because I'm so wonderful and I'm better than the rest of the community. That's not what it is. And that's the general attitude we have to have all the time. We always want to be part of something larger than ourselves. We never want to be singled out. And that is why every day when we offer all of our tefillos, you'll notice that the wording is always in the plural. We're always connecting ourselves to something much larger than who we are, which is what Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. It's what all the greats of our people have taught us, to always see ourselves, Vayigdal Moshe, to see ourselves as growing older means to see ourselves as expanding, as being larger than just myself, as understanding the needs of a community and that I am part of everything that this community represents, and I always want to participate in all that they do. And that perhaps is what Hillel is teaching us in our Mishnah, Al Tifresh Min HaTzibur.